It's Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We'll talk about remodeling your home and remodeling a home for sale, how remodeling your home might affect the value of your home, and some of the other things you should think about. In fact, a long, long list of things you should think about before investing in a fixer-upper. Bill will also answer your questions a little later on as well. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning. I'm going to attempt to answer the questions. I got kind of beat up last month, so we're going to see if we can do better.
I don't remember that. Well, I remember it differently.
I had that smart aleck Nordmeyer on
right,
here with us.
Right.
And he better be listening.
All right. Well, you know, I know a lot of people when they are thinking, okay, you know, thinking about flipping a home or thinking about, oh, I'd like to sell my house.
Right.
What do I need to do to get the most out of this house when I sell it? Where do you start?
Well, you know, one thing that we have just never really seemed to do as a group in the past is find out what we have already. And I think probably one of the best investments that somebody can make before they, you know, start doing a whole lot of planning probably is to get a certified, licensed and insured home inspector, somebody that a third party that's going to come into the home and do a really good inspection, you know, even compare, ask the inspectors, okay, what are you going to look at? And, you know, it may cost you, you know, $500-$600, but it could save you thousands. It may even change your whole decision on what you want to do.
Maybe you won't move.
You may not move. you may, yes, because I can't, yeah, you know, unless I lie about everything. No, this basement never gets wet. You know, but the thing is they can, an inspector can go in. And the nice thing about having fresh eyes is you know, every day you walk past certain things in your house. And since you see it all the time, you just don't notice it. You know, so somebody that comes in fresh can identify, you know, did you ever notice that your basement wall was bowed a little bit? Did you ever notice that the wiring is insufficient here or that, you know, it goes from newer wiring to older wiring? Have you ever noticed that your bathroom vent fans go into the attic or that you have a wet spot in the attic, but it hasn't come through the plaster or the drywall yet? You know, And that's why you want to have that person come in there, because if you're going to sell it, you know, then you're going to decide, okay, am I staying here or am I selling? If you're going to sell it, you know, if you don't fix something up that you know about, that has to be in a disclosure statement, you know. And in the past, I've been around people that wanted to hide things, and they said, well, can you cover this? Yeah, I can cover it up, but it's got to be in disclosure statement. So, well, if you don't see it, I says, that's even more important. You know, ethically, you can't do that. I mean, right. you have to tell them if you know anything that's bad and you don't fix it, you need to tell them. Or if you fix it, you still want to tell them, because then they know that you've done your due diligence and tried to bring this house up as best you can. You have to be completely open. And, you know, that's – we just have to as a society, we have to be completely open in this area. So that person comes in, let's just say, and says, okay, your foundation's, bending in. Are you going to fix it now to sell it, or are you going to leave it? Well, if I'm buying a house, I walk in the house and I see the foundation's bowed a little bit, I would probably walk away, because that could be anywhere from a few thousand to $25,000, $30,000. A lot of times people remodel to sell and just really look at that curb appeal or curb appeal. That's your first chance to really hit people with how good the house looks, how good the yard looks, how clean it is. And a lot of times that kind of reflects on the homeowner. When people first drive up, they see a really nice manicured yard that fits in with the neighborhood. The sidewalk and the driveway aren't all busted up and cracked. You know, all the windows look nice and the windows look clean. The siding is clean. There's no trees growing out of the gutters. You know, the chimney, if there is one on an older home, isn't flaking off and it's been, you know, updated a little bit. That kind of gives people kind of a warm and fuzzy, you know, hey, let's go ahead now and take that next step and go inside and take a look at it.
Now, for the homeowner, you know, sometimes I think, all right, these are some of the things that we've been avoiding taking care of for mm-hmm. the years that we've lived in this home. And then you get someone else involved and they point out these problems and tell you more about them. is it worth the investment? What's the payoff to fixing all of those things before you sell the house?
And that's something you may want to bring up with a realtor. If you have a friend that's a realtor, or some realtors will do it as a service, can you come by and give me kind of just a market appraisal, or hire an appraiser? And that there again is a very wise investment, because then you'll know what the house is worth on an appraisal statement. That really doesn't mean that's what the house is worth, but that's an appraised value that a bank can use, because they may loan, you know, up to 25-30% over that appraised. But at least you'll have an idea if you're looking at fixing it up and recouping your money. And almost all the time, especially when you look at remodeling magazines, remodeling websites, is, okay, they'll say, oh, here's a bathroom remodel, here's a kitchen remodel, here's an outside siding. And then it says, you know, when you sell it, what percentage are you going to get of that back? And most of the time, it's maybe 50, 75%. It all depends. And there again, if it's your own house, a lot of times you think it's worth more than it really is out on the market. And it's really hard. So you have to, there again, get somebody that's going to tell you what it's going to be worth when you sell it. Then you have to decide, okay, do I really want to make that big step and put the money in it? And I'm not going to know how much I'm going to put into it until I have it inspected. And many people will have the inspection, and they'll have an appraisal, and they'll have the realtor, because it's a huge investment. Like, you may spend $100,000, $150,000 remodeling a home. Well, all of a sudden, the house is only worth $150,000. I was just working on a project like that. The estimates came in. They were going to put about $110,000. Well, the house is only worth about $80,000. So, okay, you're going to stay here, and nice remodeled house that you're going to leave to somebody when you pass away, or you're just going to lose a ton of money.
So. Now, of course, a lot of people do buy properties that are fixer uppers with the hope of selling them, flipping the house. Is the math different there? I mean, do you have to pick something that's in bad enough shape that it's worth the investment? How do you do that calculation?
You know, I think a lot of times you just want to pick something that has really good bones, has good equipment in it, maybe some updated equipment, and it's mostly aesthetic. Because when you get into the really deep, say the basement, maybe the heating and cooling, if you want a properly sized and installed new heating and cooling equipment, I can almost guarantee you the first bid you get, if it's low, is not going to be the right one. We always want to say, okay, what's your cheapest price? Well, you're going to get what you pay for. You may have somebody come in, like say on a heating and cooling estimate, twice as much as somebody else. So you have to ask them, well, why is yours higher? And he says, well, because we're putting in all new ductwork that distributes it through this house now because the equipment's different. Or I could do a super cheap and just plug in a new furnace and it's not going to operate like it's supposed to. So there's a lot of research that has to be done. So if you're just, you know, I think a lot of it's kind of glossy because of, you know, everything on TV and do-it-yourself channel and everything. It's entertainment, and that's what it is, entertainment. It's not entertaining when all of a sudden you're putting your hard-earned money into a house that has bad bones, and nobody will say, oh, great siding, but what's underneath it? Is the siding rotted? Is the wood underneath rotted? Does the thing have termites? How far did they go? You know, does it have ice dams? You're standing there looking at it in the middle of July and not seeing what happens to it in the winter. People that are going to flip houses, they better have somebody there that's experienced to help them walk through it, because it's kind of deceptive sometimes. You really have to look at the bones and just start off. If you're going to flip a house, then, you know, maybe start off with just something that's very, you know, maybe some paint, things like that, that you feel comfortable with. I've got some friends that do it in Chicago, and he's done very well, but he doesn't do it anymore. And there's a reason that he doesn't do it anymore. So it's scary. It can be really scary. It can.
The other thing to think about, if it's your home and you want to make changes to it, you want to do updates, of course, you know, for your comfort, mm-hmm. or it's something you've dreamed of having your whole life and you decide it's time to make that investment. There is also the fact that when your house is assessed, it's going to be worth more. That's going to affect your property value as well. Is that something that you need to take into consideration before you make a plan?
Yeah, it is. That's the other thing. Those property taxes could really climb. You know, a lot of people will say, well, I'm not going to get a permit because if I get a permit, they're going to know that I've done something. You know, you hear that all the time. You know, there again, you may end up paying maybe 25% more in taxes. It may go up $2,000 a year that you weren't thinking of before, because you fixed the house up and you've added this and you've added that. And if you're doing anything structural or wiring or plumbing, there is going to be a permit. So somebody is going to come out and take a look at that.
And it's a good idea to get a permit.
Yeah, because, I mean, they can put a stop order on it and then make you take everything apart and go back to work. And then you can say, okay, now buy the permit now. So you don't want to mess around with that. And not to mention, most building inspectors are very helpful and they'll help you through the process.
But that is something you should think about. You should factor it into the price of the remodel, knowing that this is going to cost you more in the future.
There is. But, you know, then you can come back and say, well, if I'm going to do this remodel, what's it going to do for energy savings maybe? Maybe that's the only reason you're remodeling now, is because you're looking at, okay, we know that energy prices are going to go up. And so in 10 years, how much, let's say they go up 10%. The investment that I put in air tightening and air sealing and all that, that may come back and help pay for part of, you know, of the remodel or the retrofit. But in a lot of cases, it's just so doggone expensive to do it. And so that's why a lot of people will just do the freshen up one. They'll feel better. They'll put in new equipment. Their energy bills, you know, hopefully will come down, especially if you put new sidings put on properly and do air sealing correctly. Your energy bills would, you know, probably come down quite a bit. But if you're just looking at payoff, it's really, really hard to get it.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He is prepared to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here this hour. We've been talking about some of the things you need to take into consideration when you are considering remodeling your home, whether you're doing that to sell the house, whether you're doing that to make yourself more comfortable and happier if you're thinking about an investment property. But, of course, you can also call with your other home improvement-related questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. First on the line today is Susan in Muscatine. Hi, Susan.
Hi there.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, my question for Bill is this. I am 70 years old, and there's a reason I'm telling you this. I am thinking about making a move to another city and another state, and this is probably the last house I will ever move to, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I've had 14 years of working in the energy field, so I do know something about energy efficiency. I also have remodeled before with my own home. What I'm thinking about doing is I would love to walk the talk, buy an old house that has good bones, gut the entire place, really make it energy efficient, you know, just really do a good job on the place, because this is probably going to be the last place I ever live in. Now, I keep asking myself, you are nuts to do this. Why not just buy a condo? You know, I go back and forth. I feel like I'm standing on a cliff. To jump off. Well, either I will land really well or I may fall flat on the rock. I just don't know.
Well, I think you ought to buy the condo up on Lake Superior and I'll come up and visit. You know,
name the state. I'm moving to Minnesota. I'm thinking about moving to Minnesota.
Oh, all right. Well, I got to get your name here later then. This will work out sweet. Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny in the last since you've been in energy efficiency some, you know, you've probably seen that swing to doing everything on the exterior.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think, you know, if my wife and I wanted to get a place up north, an older home, you know, that has that character, because that's the neat thing about a lot of the older homes. If you can find the nice one with the great old original trim, and I wouldn't want to tear that up for anything. So I would do everything on the outside and do an energy efficient retrofit on the exterior. Now, we've been trying to do a couple of them in Northeast Iowa with the Iowa Economic Development Authority using their Green Streets criteria. And the estimates have come in, you know, fairly high. And it's not on the energy efficiency side. It's just on everything else, like the siding, you know, and all the roof and having to deal with lead paint, things like that. That's where the numbers have been high. In fact, on the energy efficiency side and saving the energy, the numbers have been very low percentage of the overall project. So, you know, if you go to Minnesota, there's a ton of information at the University of Minnesota, and so great people up there to help you out. But up there, you know, probably what a lot of the guys are doing, and I've seen them doing, they're putting an inch and a half to 2 inches of foam on the exterior of the house, air sealing it, putting, you know, a water-resistive barrier on the outside of the foam. And then if the windows are halfway decent shape, they're just installing storms rather than new windows.
Okay.
And actually, you know, that there's a lot of really good research that's showing, you know, if the windows are halfway decent and you put really good storms on, that you're getting some pretty good return. And in Minnesota, you'll find out, too, that if you want to do anything in the attic, it's a state law in Minnesota. You have to pull the insulation out in the attic, air seal the complete attic, and then you can put new insulation in. It's against their building code that you can just throw more insulation in the attic up there. So they're very proactive. I'm hoping Iowa comes to that here pretty soon. It creates more jobs as well, but it does, you know, that way the insulation can do what it wants. And then you don't have to be in that mess. That's almost the best thing, is that you don't have to mess around with the inside of the house.
Well, and Susan, it sounds like your heart is really in a rehab property.
Yes, it is. On my good days, I make a joke about it. Every once in a while, I have lower back pains, and I think, oh, you need to buy a condo. But when I'm feeling good and I'm in good health, I just want to do this so badly. I want to prove to the world, it's not going to be a big house because I live by myself, but I want to prove to the world that you can do this, and it's a good thing to do.
Yes.
And my heart is, that's where it's going. So University of Minnesota has good resources there.
Yes.
I used to live there. In fact, I know one of the guys that was involved with improving the building codes up there. So, okay, University of Minnesota, I'll check into this. Thank you.
Yes.
Good luck, Susan.
And Susan, get a hold of their at the university, the building science area, and Pat Hellman is the person. He used to be at Iowa State. Pat Hellman is the person to get a hold of at university, and he's got a building science program second to none. And they're always looking for things like yours, you know, that they may be able to, you know, really provide maybe even a student to help you design.
All right, Susan, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck.
Cheryl is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My husband and I'm sorry, I'm traveling, so I hope I don't lose your signal. My husband and I are needing to do a kitchen remodel. We're just to the point of drawing up plans and trying to get great ideas put together. One of the things that we would like to do is take out a load-bearing wall. Now, we are aware that we're going to have to do a beam across the ceiling, and we have a steel beam running the entire length of the house. To figure out what type of beam and if it's even possible, should we hire a structural engineer to come in and take a look at this to see if this is even a possibility before we fine-tune our plans too much?
You know, since it's hard to visualize sometimes what it is. In many cases, you know, a person at a lumber yard has a lot of that design information with him for some of the beams. But in your case, especially since you mentioned steel beams, so these loads would be transferred down to that steel beam probably, wouldn't they?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Then, you know, in your case, it's a fairly extensive remodel when you do a kitchen anyway. So this is a good time to maybe bring in a structural engineer. The one thing is you know, they're licensed, and you know, this is all they do is figure loads. And I would probably do that now that, you know, because there's so much in this particular case, it's so much better to overbuild something than it is to underbuild. You don't want anything on the second floor to sag or any loads to sag over the next, say, 10 years. You may not see anything in 1 or 2 years. So you want to have a structural engineer come in there because you never know that the loads where you're transferring these loads may transfer down to the beam. And if the beam isn't sitting, once it takes additional weight, the beam may not be sitting on enough of a footing to carry the weight that's up above. I've seen houses where these columns are actually getting kind of shoved into the basement because nobody took into account the size of the footing at the very bottom of all this load of carrying the weight and what kind of soil it was. So, I would get a structural engineer on something like this.
Okay.
All right, Cheryl.
You bet.
Yep. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Deb in Clear Lake. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Hi.
In the process of, I find your show very interesting because I'm in the process of buying an acreage and moving from the city to the acreage. One of the things that we discovered when we were looking at the acreage is that he has a vent pipe coming out of the hot water heater, and it's going up right beside the siding. Now, the heat from the hot water heater has melted some of the siding or created a brown cast. Can you put another pipe on it and curve it down for a hot water heater? That's my first question. And then the second question is, in looking at that, we discovered that the siding is not laid like a brick pattern. And we know that there's water barrier behind it, but how long will we have to worry about fixing that correctly?
Well, the pipe for a water heater always has to be going up. If it turns down, then you'll probably create a trap, and then it won't vent properly, and the fumes will come back into the house. I personally don't like natural vented furnaces or water heaters. I think that we're way past the time that they should even be in a house. So this may be your opportunity to look at that water heater. If it's got some age on it, transfer it out to a direct vent or an assisted vent water heater. The one thing, you know, that's kind of interesting about this that you mentioned is the siding is melted. Well, look at all that waste heat that you lost, over all the years of that going up the vent and melding the siding. So you would want to either revent it properly, which you'd want a heating and cooling person to come out and make sure that that's always going uphill and that it's going out the top of the house. Never should be going downhill any, because it'll back up on you. Now the other thing is, I'm kind of confused. Is it brick fake siding? Is that?
No, I'm sorry. How they place the siding? It's not like where a good water flow would come off. You know how you layer it over.
Oh. Okay. You'd want to fix that. Actually, you'd want to fix that as soon as possible because, during the hot, humid parts of the summer, especially like right now in the mornings, if there's any moisture at all, on the siding or behind the siding, it's not drying, and it's the perfect temperature for rot to just start just taking your wall apart. We think about moisture getting new walls in the winter. Okay, well, yeah, it gets in there, but it can't really do a whole lot until it gets warm enough for the mold and rot to survive. And so now if there's any leak or place at all where the water can get and make that siding wet or get it behind wet, I've got some great pictures of the framing halfway eaten away towards the inside of the house because it didn't have a chance to dry. So I would take care of that right now. Before it gets cold, but before we even get maybe more rains or anything.
All right, Deb, thanks a lot
your
call.
Deb.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio, and you can join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Julie is on the line next in Ottumwa. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I am just newly retired, my husband and I, and we are moving from our wonderful 1923 house that we really love to a one-story something. And we're changing towns, and we recently looked at a duplex that is move-in ready, has just like everything you could want, and a brick ranch that was probably built back in the 50s. Mm. And the ranch would take all new windows. It's got these little square pane of like about 10 panes of glass windows, and there's not even screens. They're down in the basement.
Okay.
But it would take either putting getting a one story, which I really don't like, because of physical issues, like not wanting to have to go up and down steps because I've had a couple knee replacements and a couple hip replacements. And so we're trying to avoid the steps. The ranch needs new windows. It would need to have a half bath, have a walk-in shower put into it. And, you know, we're trying to go between, it's $10,000 less than the new construction. But my take is, I'm tired of fixing things, and I need to leave that to the younger people.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, we just go back and forth on whether the ranch is the brick ranch is a good idea. You know, it's on its own lot. It has a lot bigger garage. But, you know, the other one, just I could just set myself in it and forget about it. So.
Well, which neighborhood do you like better?
Well, you know what? I think that isn't an issue on
okay.
this. Both of them are fine.
Okay.
But that's a big issue for me because the last time I moved, I said, listen, I'm buying the neighborhood. That's my first.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is this new home, is it, you know, fairly, you know, universal design? You know, are the doors in it 3 feet wide? Now, I mean, does it just have kind of like standard 32-inch doors? And
I think it might kind of have the standard doors. I'm going to say I know it's probably, you know, I forgot to look at that. And I haven't gone back and looked at it the second time.
Well,
and that was one of the things I was going to look at. But it was probably built maybe 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, you know, I would get the utility bills on both, or projected energy bills there as well, because I was just in a town home here. A friend of mine lived in, and it was brand new when he moved in, and he couldn't even really fall asleep sometimes because the wind was blowing in so hard through the receptacles and the outside walls. I mean, it was unbelievably nice looking and very poorly built behind the paint. Mm-hmm. So I would really, you know, ask some people that live in the same building, same area, same builder, you know, okay, have you had any problems? You know, because after 10 years, things start popping up. And it's just normal. Mm-hmm. You know, houses are made out of wood. You know, because since you've had the replacements, you know, the next step may be a walker. I mean, I've had replacements, so, you know, I'm always looking at, I want to make sure that there's room for a walker, there's room for, you know, that walk-in shower. How hard is it to remodel to put that walk-in shower? But some of these older houses built in the 50s, it's amazing how efficient they really are and how well-built they are.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's a really tough decision. But like you say, there's one good thing to say about just walking in. And I'm done, but I would check on the background of that particular style and builder and everything, and then put your money into, you know, making it universal design. Probably one of the first things I would do, even if you moved into the new one, is have an electrician come over, put a receptacle behind the toilet of the largest bathroom, so that if you do have issues with the replacements, that, you know, you can get those the power seat that comes up off the toilet. And so that you don't have to hunt around for something to grab onto when you're using toilet. I mean, it's just happens when you've had knee surgery or something. That's the first thing you think of when you come home is, what am I going to hang on to? And there's nothing there but some little towel bar screwed into the drywall. So that would probably be one of the first things I would think of if I were you. But
all right, but make sure if If it's move-in ready and that's something that appeals to you, just make sure that the quality is there.
Yeah, make sure that and you've got to look past the carpet, the paint, and the cabinets and light fixtures, and really do some digging and find out and ask about maybe the person next door and the unit right next door. Say, how's this thing really working? And then if it's a duplex, make sure that the firewall is correct. Have an inspector come in and make sure that it is built, because I was just in a new one the other day that wasn't. So you want to be fire protected.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Julie, thank you very much for your call. You can join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, ready to take your questions. 866-780-9100. We're going to get to
You just hold on a second. Now I got to get back to Julie. Because we were talking over break. I says, you know, I was thinking, you know, Julie, that branch has got a nice garage. It's not all about you. So I'm just thinking of your husband here. When you said it had a nice garage, I'm banking on the brick one.
I think I know where Julie's heart is. I think she wants the duplex.
I'm kind of going.
They'll work it out on their own.
Let us know how your husband likes his new garage.
All right. We're going to take another phone call. Then we'll get to a few email questions, and we'll get back to the phones after that. Wayne is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, guys.
Hi. What's your question?
Say, Bill, we've had our home for about 15 years now, and it had new shingles about 2 years before we bought it. And so I was just wondering, what's the right time and what should we be looking for to know when it's time to get the house reshingled?
Well, if there isn't any leaks, look for the curls. And it depends how many hailstorms it's probably gone through, how much wind. If you're seeing any loose shingles, if you're seeing any curling, are you cleaning your own gutters?
Yes.
Are you getting a lot of sediment down in them? Okay. Well, next time you're up there, look at that, the first few courses or so, and see if you can see some fine lined cracks that run right along, say, like the gullet, that gap in the shingles. And if it's starting to crack, 15 years is, and most shingles, even if they're like a 20, 25 year shingle, with our weather, you want to start really looking at it. If you're seeing a lot of that sediment, you're seeing any cracking, I'd really keep an eye on it. And when you start seeing pieces of shingles break off, it's probably time to get it done, and make sure that, that they pull those shingles off and put down the new. And the other thing that you want to make sure, if you do have new ones put on, that they put that ice and water shield down.
Yeah.
Usually in Iowa, it's going to have two courses, not just one, because it has to go 2 feet inside of the wall. So in most houses, they have a 2 foot overhang. Even a 1 foot overhang, you're going to have two layers of that getting around. So make sure they include that in that estimate. But if they're not, they're not curling, you don't see any cracks, just check them every time you go up, and hopefully you'll be safe for a while. And it's funny, in some of the areas, you're seeing those 20 year shingles go 30 years. It just depends on the wind and the sun and the hail.
All right, Wayne, thanks a lot
thanks,
your call.
Wayne.
And we have a lot of questions today, Bill. This one's from Amy. I own a rental home in a historic neighborhood and will be doing some exterior work on it in a year or two. The home is brick and aluminum siding. And I was wondering if it would be practical to try and remove the old aluminum siding and restore the original wood siding. I can tell on the covered porch that the lap siding depth is about 3 pieces to 1 piece of aluminum siding. What are the possible issues we could run into?
Yeah. In fact, if it's in a historical area, the people around you that are trying to make their homes more historical are going to love you for replacing that aluminum. The nice thing is, though, too, is be sure and save that aluminum. And you can – it's amazing how much money that adds up to taking it back to a recycler. But if you pull the aluminum off, take a top, work from your way down in this case, and see what's behind there. And when you put the aluminum back, you may have to maybe fur that out, and depends if there's living space behind it, whether you would add foam to save on heating and cooling. But you would, it's kind of nice to fur that out so that when the new siding comes down and it laps over the brick, and there's going to be some flashing at the top of the brick where it meets the siding, and make sure that flashing is not, the flashing is going to go up the face of the brick, maybe half an inch, let's say, and then it goes over the top of the brick, and then it goes vertically up against the house. Make sure that flashing is as far back as possible into this whole assembly so that any water gets behind the siding cannot get behind the flashing. A lot of people will just nail the flashing on and tape it, and that tape's not going to last. You have to have something tucked behind a house wrap or felt paper or something. That's always a key issue is that, but that's a really good thing to do. You're really going to like that. And there's a lot of things that you can put up that meet that historical. I'd go back and maybe research the house and see what they had before. Maybe they had cedar or white pine or redwood siding and make it the same.
All right. Here's a question from Renee, and you're going to have to try to be brief on this one, Bill, okay?
No.
We have a lovely older home with great bones that we've lived in and worked on for the last 15 years, but our neighborhood is in decline. Should we stop doing improvements on our home? We're worried about super improving the house, yet it's always been a dream of mine to fix this house up. We are looking at staying in the house at least another 5 years. Better yet, here's the big one. How can we bring up the neighborhood as a whole?
Oh, that's tough.
Right. That's you just a bigger question.
Yeah. You just can't go over there and say, hey, now. there's a couple of ways to look at this. People have a tendency to, we like to keep up with the Joneses a lot of times. And so I would not stop. I would keep fixing it up. It's your home. You have pride in your home. And the other people, after seeing it, may want to improve their own stead. And there's no reason not to. I wouldn't stop. No matter what, I wouldn't stop because you have pride in your own things, and you shouldn't really worry about what your neighbors think. But it may hurt you on resale because of the neighbor. But you see these cycles, these neighborhoods that were maybe kind of dumpy 10, 15 years ago, and all of a sudden now people are just moving in, flocking because they can get a real deal. So it may be such a case that you fix your home up, and then other people thinking of either buying an older home and fixing it up or flipping. They would say, hey, if we fix four or five of these up, the whole neighborhood goes up. And so I wouldn't stop. I would kind of hope that other people would want to stay with you. I don't know. You'd have to get some mediator or something. I know I wouldn't handle it right at all. So we'd have to get somebody like Charity to come and talk really nice to them and try to get everybody to upgrade it. But they may not be able to afford it either.
But if your home, if you love this home.
Yes, I'd keep fixing it up. Right. It's your home.
All right. Yeah. Anne is on the line next in Carlisle. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Why, my husband and I are in the process of maybe buying a flipped home, and we were in there this morning for an inspection and found that there's a newer bathroom and a bedroom in the basement, neither of which has ductwork or heating in it. How is this going to happen that this gets fixed? I mean, how much would it cost?
Well, what would scare me right there is, okay, I'd ask him, okay, well, where is this heat? And then if there's a basement, you say there's a bedroom in the basement?
A new bedroom.
Okay, is there an egress window in there, a window that they can...
Yes, there is.
So it's big enough they can get out. I mean,
yes.
Okay. Well, to me, I would go in there and think, okay, now if they didn't get this right or didn't think of this, what are the things that are hidden that they may have missed? I'd give them a chance. I'll say, hey, what's the... who did the work? I'd ask them, is it just... somebody that just thought it'd be fun to do this, or did licensed contractors do this? You can ask for a copy of the permit. You can ask for all the paperwork from right. the contractors and all that. If you're buying this thing, you know, hey, I want to know what's going on here. This is a big investment. So, you know, ask for everything and then ask, why isn't this? And say, well, you know, I would just say, well, I'm not even going to give you a dime until this is, remedied.
And but you can fix that. You can.
You can. But then the other case is, since it's in a basement, what's behind? I mean, are you looking at a bare wall, or are you looking at a drywalled or paneled wall in that bedroom?
I believe it's drywall.
Okay, I'd ask, well, what's behind the drywall? You know, is it just fiberglass thrown up against a cold concrete block wall that may be leaking? Mm-hmm. You know, that's why in your case I'd get a certified inspector doing this inspection, or were you doing?
Oh, yes. No.
Okay.
It's a certified inspector.
Well, I'd want to find out exactly. I'm glad they saw that. I'd want to get a complete list and, you know, have this remedied, because I'd be really, I'm always nervous about what's behind drywall and basement.
Okay.
Especially in Iowa, you know, especially when we've had all this rain. It just, and they may have done a really good job. They may have put foam back there and watertight and everything. And I just want to know, because if it's a big investment.
Yeah.
Just don't shy away from asking hard questions either. Don't worry about being nice. This is a case where you've got to, you know, maybe kind of bristle up a little bit and say, I want to know what's going on.
All right, Ann, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Jane in Scranton. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Hi.
I've not got a project that I'm working on right now, but I was real interested in some things to do with accessibility. And I know the one caller you talked to that it had the knee and the hip replacements, and that's not what mine is. It's a long time thing. But
okay.
I'm interested in where you get good information about what you should do and maybe what you don't need to do. I live in a house that I'm on a farm, actually, so my house is attached to some land. But my parents built a different home than I grew up in about 35 years ago. And so I've got three bedrooms and a couple of bathrooms all on one level. But there's some things, as I think about if I were to do something that might make it more livable for longer for me, where would I get good information?
Mm-hmm. Well, Iowa State University has some really good information on universal design. And I believe they still have the lab and studio there. I'm hoping they did a few years ago, but they had a studio there where you could go in and see everything that and how it's placed in a house. I would give Iowa State Extension a call and ask them about that. But on the internet, there is a ton of information on universal design. And that's the term that, you know, is pretty much prevalent in the building industry now. And the nice thing is, you know, it's talking about how to make receptacles and switches, you know, all the plugins and that, so you don't have to bend over as much. Sight lines are a really big thing, like changing different colors of flooring if there's a step, not just continuing, say, tile or carpet over if you step down into another room. You know, think about if your vision is poor. The doorway widths, allowing enough space for, you know, wheelchairs and bathrooms and turnarounds, and the height of toe kicks on cabinets. All that stuff is very prevalent in universal design. And the big one is, you know, zero step entry.
I think we should talk about this when you come back next month, Bill.
Okay.
I think
okay.
that would be a great idea. But so Iowa State University.
Yes, Iowa State University has it. And anything on universal design you can find.
All right, Jane, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Scott in Des Moines. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I was wondering, I have a older home. It's 60s. It has a split level, and in the back, it has a vaulted ceiling, and I've been getting some moisture problems, and I think it doesn't have enough insulation. It could be improved. I know the soffits are peeling paint, and we have some wet spots in some of the ceilings, and I know that there's a bathroom up there, and the fan's not vented properly, which needs to be fixed, but there's also kind of a bulkhead above the sink and some recessed lighting, and there's always hot air coming out.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Wondering, you know, maybe how do I improve the ventilation, the insulation, the air sealing? What's maybe the best step?
And those are sometimes kind of tough. The vaulted ceilings, is the moisture like right at the peak?
No, it's more down towards the ridge.
Oh, it is. Okay. Well, yeah, you'll want to get up in there and take a look at what type of insulation, how much it is. You know, the 60s houses, some of them had a kind of a fibrous board, an old kind of an asphalt impregnated board that was like 4 to 6 inches thick. And that's what they used in the vaulted ceilings, but we didn't have enough insulation and we had condensation issues. There's several ways to handle that. Usually, you know, you're either going to have to add more insulation on top or in like a 60s homes, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll add foam on the inside surface and then add more drywall to warm that surface up. The can lights, though, the recessed lights in that, you'll have to get up in the attic and seal that whole area above a soffit. It's amazing what we did in the 60s and 70s, how many leaks. I can just see that in the winter, how much if you went up in the attic in the winter, if you had glasses, they'd fog right over when you got into that area of the warm air coming up into the attic. The biggest thing to do for is to air seal that ceiling, pull the insulation back and caulk and foam, and maybe use some mastic. That mastic is a material that they seal ductwork with that you can put on with a brush or with your hand using a glove. Just to stop all the air from going up into the attic, because that air takes moisture. If you can stop that air and then make sure that the bathroom vent fan goes outside, doesn't vent back into the attic, a lot of this is going to disappear. But those vaulted ceilings are always very hard. You really have to get up in the attic or find a spot where you can dig around maybe from below to find out what kind of insulation is there. You may have an older builder in the area or a remodeler that's kind of works in the older buildings. Ask them, because a lot of times you can, in certain areas like in Fort Dodge, I can go buy a house and I know exactly what they have for ceilings because we've worked on them before. So you find maybe a remodeler to help you out on it a little bit, and maybe they, you know, just kind of steer you in the right direction, but you'd still do some of the work.
All right, Scott, thanks a lot for your call. We'll try to squeeze in another email question. This one's from Roy. He says, we have Anderson crank open windows with screens inside. How can I protect them against hail?
The screens are on the inside of the house, though.
Right.
Yeah, so they're not going to get hit by the hail.
I think he's asking about the windows.
Oh. This is Monday. We've never done it, Catherine. We've never done a Monday. Let's see. Well, it depends on how big of an overhang you have. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to.
Right.
Now, some people, you know, have put awnings up, and, you know, some people still go back and make the old shutters and flip them over when they think there's going to be hail. Most of those windows, it's going to take quite a bit. I mean, it really is. I tried to break one this weekend that I won't even go into that story, but it was laying on my deck, and I'm trying to bust the doggone thing with my foot, and I couldn't get it to break. You know, it had to have something like a hailstone to hit it. But anyway, if you're worried about it, maybe you can make a shutter. But most of those windows,
maybe don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't. I mean, if you got good insurance, it's going to take care of it. But a lot of times, they just take pretty good hail. It's got to be a pretty good stone to break these windows now. And I apologize that Monday. Yeah, of course the screen would be. Yeah. Screen door in a submarine, you betcha.
Bill McAnally, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. He will be back again next month. Talk of Iowa is produced by Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can email us anytime. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about bicycling culture in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.